Okay, and this is the hour we'll take your phone calls and stories about the afterlife, the last frontier with Julia Asante, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back with Julia Asante and your phone calls, which we'll get to in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Julia, are more and more people becoming aware, do you think, of the afterlife and what to expect?
Hugely. The stuff that I'm doing now, reception is enormous. It wouldn't happen 10, 15 years ago. People would not listen. Near-death experience research has probably done more than anything to soften our notion of the afterlife and to restore our notion of benign universe. I think it's all moving from there. It's moving from love and compassion instead of punishment.
Once people, I think, learn this and understand it, it makes their life a little better, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely, I totally agree.
Tell me a little bit about your after-death communications. How does that happen? How do you know the mind's not playing tricks with you?
Well, as I said before, the tricks of the mind do not warn people from impending danger, and tricks of the mind do not heal, and tricks of the mind do not reconcile, and tricks of the mind do not instantly clear up post-traumatic stress disorder. So these kinds of things are real. Tricks of the mind also don't act independently. In other words, when you have an after-death communication, you're often surprised. You're surprised at what you're learning. You're surprised even by the visit. Most people who have spontaneous encounters were not expecting them. They weren't even wanting them. So all in all, it points to an independence, a mental independence coming towards us from the great beyond. And certainly that's true in my own life. And I'm told things like if I need help with an animal dying or something, someone will come in and actually tell me when that's going to happen, what moment. Tremendous amount of help I get from friends and family from the other side. Just fantastic stuff.
All right, let's go to some of the phones here
okay.
for you. Let's go to Joe in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Joe, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Joe.
There's actually another twist of the afterlife. Perhaps the afterlife is probably an extraterrestrial creation, perhaps by aliens that created the universe. Because perhaps they control the order of the soul and decide which soul reincarnates, which soul comes around, who is born. Because this universe, because like there were ancient Greek philosophers that said that, perhaps there's a demon created the universe that fools all. Because there will be a possibility that that this whole universe we're in is like the movie The Matrix. That's just computer simulation, possibly. And we're actually an artificial universe and aliens in a real universe. And our existence is just some sort of to ascend to a higher level. And now we're in some sort of like with the Bible, the Genesis, we're like fallen souls. The universe trying to ascend to a higher level, possibly, and some sort of computerized extraterrestrial universe. So our universe, like the whole.
That's an interesting theory, I think, Julio. Extraterrestrials and the afterlife.
Right. In a way, what's the difference between an extraterrestrial and a dead person? I mean, when you're talking about any form of organized consciousness that's not in body, you're talking about an extraterrestrial. So all of these definitions actually get quite blurry when you're working with non-local realities. And there's all kinds of dimensions to any given consciousness, not just operating on a human level or the level they do in life, but in many transcendent levels, which also put them in the category of a high, as you call it, a higher mentality of an extraterrestrial.
Let's go next to Matt in Bismarck, North Dakota. Welcome to the program. Hey, Matt, go ahead.
Hey, I was wondering if you were aware of the pineal gland.
Sure.
And dimethyltryptamine.
Yes.
Yes.
DMT.
What are your thoughts on that? Yeah.
That's a very interesting thing, and A friend of mine has a film coming out called The Sun Revolution, because the theory is that this sun activity that we're expecting in the spring may, in fact, trigger more DMT. And it will change our consciousness. And the whole idea behind this kind of research is that this has happened before and may even have been the reason why we develop language.
Judea, tell me with your work, The Last Frontier, how did you even start into it?
It came from the death of someone I love very dearly, and I'll just make this short. The communication with him after he died was mind-boggling. It went on for an hour. There was argument, there was laughter, there was discussion. It was just an amazing thing, and I knew then, even after all these years of communicating with the afterlife, that this had to be written about, and that we can all have that. So
next
that's
up,
the greatest impulse.
Let's go to Angela in Minnesota, east of the Rockies. Hey, Angela, go ahead.
Hi. How are you guys?
Hi.
Good.
Real quickly, I had an experience when I was about 5 or 6 years old where I almost drowned. And I fell in a canal, and I was at a boat show with my parents. And they didn't see me fall in, but a man like a mile down came running with his arms and waving. And my stepdad finally saw that I fell in and pulled me up out of the water by my fingers. And I remember being under the water trying to, like, feel for the top. So who was this man? And why don't I have a fear of dying?
I'm not quite clear. You know, what was your perception of this man? Was it somebody you only saw, or was it something your stepfather saw? I'm not quite clear.
Well, they saw him, like, running down, like, so far down, and not anybody in front of me saw me fall in the water. And they just said he was there and told them, and then he was gone. It was really odd.
He said he just vanished.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. You really have a question about that?
Well, I just thought I just wanted to know if you saw a name or was that my angel or?
You don't necessarily have to go to an angel, but certainly this is somebody who knows you. And it feels to me that it's somebody that's from a recent past life.
Okay.
Yeah. It seems to me like a young, not a very old man, maybe in his 30s or 40s, and somebody you knew not so long ago. Probably was in the last century.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, sure.
Julia, do you think in reincarnation that we are associated with the same people all the time? We switch roles, but everybody's still there?
Well, we do tend to create constellations, absolutely. There are, I call them sort of psychic families or soul families or whatever, and we do seem to switch around with them. And sometimes you can have more than one incarnation happening at the same time, too, which are really, really strong. But don't forget also the future ones are in existence as well. And so it's quite an extended family.
Why don't we remember our past lives?
We do.
Generally. I mean, we do in regression, but I mean, not
right.
Normal life.
Well, we do. Up until the age of 4, most children do. They're censored. Not just that, but we don't actively excavate them. We don't encourage them to come out of a child when the memory is still there. It's the same as losing any kind of memory. How much do we remember of any given childhood? You know, very little. It's just not kept in place. But mainly it has to do with censorship. But recalling past and future lives is quite a simple matter. There's just a very mild altered state, very mild suggestion. Bang, it's there.
Why do some ghosts scare people and others are friendly?
Ooh, well, I could hardly say anything total about that. I mean, first of all, ghosts and dead people are not the same. So you have certain kinds of ghosts that usually have to do with compulsive energies, driven, obsessive stuff, very self-involved, and in some cases that can be quite dark. It can very easily scare somebody. If a person creates a ghost, especially before death, that is very dark, very negative, very frightened or angry, others around that ghost who come in the same proximity to that ghost can be scared. Absolutely.
Next up, we go to Fresno, California. Hello, Terry. Take it away.
Hey, I had a question for you. I was wondering if you ever had any experience with something coming to you appearing to be something that it's not. I've been very sensitive my whole life, lots of experiences, but after the death of my mother, I immediately had something come to me that I felt was completely wrong. And since then, I've shut everything down. And I was just wondering if you ever had any experience with that.
Not really, but I know of those experiences that sometimes can be a projection of your own fear. I would really, really suggest that you look into your heart about communicating with your mother and what sort of fears you might have about that and try it again.
Okay.
Good?
Good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome indeed. Debbie's in Seattle. Hey, Debbie, go ahead.
Hi, Ms. Dante. Hi, George.
Hi.
Hello, Deb.
I have a quick thing. This is a quick question, yes or no. When you are dealing with a medium and they're telling you they can see your dead loved ones and what their dead loved ones are saying, can you ask the medium to ask them questions?
Oh, you had better. First of all, it's better not to go to a medium. It's better to do it yourself. Most people, when they go to a medium and make contact with someone they very much care about, afterwards they feel they've lost the person a second time. It can create a lot of depression and helplessness. We all are mediums. And so one of the things that when you do want to make contact with someone on the other side is to have questions. Questions will keep your communication structured, and it'll keep momentum going. Yes, write questions, or if you are working with a medium, have lots of questions. And have those questions coming right from your strongest emotion. Okay?
Right. Let's go to Kevin, truck driving in Kentucky. Kev, go ahead.
Hey, George. How's it going?
Good, Kevin.
I've developed a second part of the question, but my first question was, in life, you know, the physical body is what we or inhabit, would it be kind of safe to say that the soul is kind of our body in death, that the consciousness inhabits, or is there no actual form?
Well, there is a kind of an energy body that you can actually witness leaving the physical body. And also, can you think about how little there is to a physical body? If you took all of this space out of all the atoms in your physical body, you'd be a microscopic dot of matter. There's almost nothing there. But this energy body, which is sort of held together by a consciousness, a pattern of consciousness, people can see it leave. It's called shared death experiences, and more doctors and hospice nurses are seeing it. And you can watch it leave. But then, because it's an energy body, it can transform in all kinds of things. It moves by intention. There is a kind of a pattern that is they return to, especially for after death communication, that they come to us looking their very best at their peak, using this pattern. Does that answer your question? I'm not sure it does.
Yeah, that's real quick on the second one. Over the years and listening to the program and just personal experiences, I believe in just about everything that you're saying and about an afterlife and all that. And it always seems like that's almost like it's a much better place than where we're at now. And I guess my question would be, why are we here? What is our purpose of here? Why do we just not go ahead and check out and go back there?
Well, we do. And think about what this is in the face of eternity. This is a nanosecond. But it's a priceless experience. I mean, the experiment of being in a physical realm is actually, from what I understand, fairly rare. The point is to enjoy it. The point is to experiment with it, to play with it, to fulfill yourself within it, even despite the limitations that we have in body.
Well, what you just said right there about it being kind of like a exclusive experience. That kind of answered it for me there.
Great. Glad.
Thanks, guys.
All right. You're welcome. Thanks for the questions, too. Appreciate that. Do you speak around the country at all, Julia?
Sure. Here and in the States and in Europe.
What do you find that most people want to know?
Well, it depends on the group. Some people are very interested in grief, but many are extremely interested in after-death communication because that is a major need. Things left unsaid just to know how someone is. This is a huge need, and that is something I'm most trying to fulfill.
All right, let's go to Dan in Tampa, Florida. Get you in here before the break. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yes, some years ago, I was in a church, and I had a demon being exercised out of me, and I had a prayer warrior doing it, and he said he had a message from me of what God or Jesus wanted me to do with my life, and before he got to tell me, he was cut off by someone started speaking in tongues, and he stopped. He said, he wants you to do, and then he just stopped. Now, I didn't know if he was able to contact the other side to find out what that prayer warrior was wanting to tell me.
Go to a psychic. Seriously.
Okay.
Go to some, because, you know, all of this is going to be coming from yourself anyway. You're the one who knows. Deep down, you're the one who knows. Nobody else. Well, others can, but you're the one who has that very personal and deep information. You know why you were born. But psychics can, or intuitives can, help you see yourself better. And that's all they're really doing, for the most part. And sometimes they'll be listening to people from the other side. I suspect you have somebody over there who's trying to help you, and I'm feeling very grandfather here.
Speaking of helpers, does everybody have one?
Oh, not one.
From the other side?
Not one. Tons. And for different reasons. And sometimes even, George, even your future self can be your helper.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It happened to me. My future self saved my life when I was a child.
What happened?
I was trying to cross the street, and I kept putting my foot down on the curb, and I kept getting a tap on the back of my shoulder, and I knew no one was there. And it was so insistent, I finally turned around, and I saw myself as an adult. And I was in such a state of shock. Of course, it didn't look solid, but I was in such a state of shock that I stopped dead. Once I got over it and turned around, I would have been hit by a car. Let's just put it that way. I would have been dead.
All right, Julia, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take some final phone calls with you. Julia Asante, The Last Frontier. Her website, of course, is her name, juliaasante.com. Need to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, I'll tell you what's in store on our next Coast to Coast program. Plus, we'll take your final calls. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to do our JFK assassination show. Of course, as you know, he died on November 22nd, 1963. That happens to be Thanksgiving night. I've got my own program scheduled for that. But on our next show, we will do a JFK assassination show with two special guests. Make sure you're part of that program. When we come back in a moment with Julia Asante, we'll take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast with Julia Asante, of course. We'll take your final phone calls. Julia, I got to ask you, where did we get your book, The Last Frontier?
Should be in all local bookstores. Certainly all internet booksellers have it. Yeah, the electronic forms are up now, too.
Good. Did you enjoy writing it?
Yeah, it was a real act of love.
Let's talk a little bit about telepathy before we go to the calls. How easy is that for you now?
Everybody has telepathy, and everybody uses it. You know, telepathy is what keeps civilizations together. So it's an ongoing, constant, unconscious process. But if you just think about how often a person relates that they knew who was going to be calling on the phone just before the phone rang, that's the simplest incident of telepathy. The phone is the biggest symbol for telepathy of all time and for after-death communication. This simple telephone, it's when it all started in a way.
It's a good training, isn't it?
You're right on there. All of our technology is training us for this.
That's
the telephone the most, yeah, absolutely. Discarnate voices.
In your life, what has been the most touching event story that you've come across?
From someone else, you mean?
Yeah.
Ooh, to really think about that.
Something that got to you emotionally.
From someone else.
Yep. Because I would guess that most of the time, you insulate yourself pretty well.
Oh, no, not really. No, in fact, my interaction with people is an awful lot about their telling me stories. I think one of the most touching things, this may sound kind of strange to you. I know a woman whose daughter was murdered. This woman's an atheist, and yet every morning she gets up, she gets out of her bed, she kneels down, she prays to her daughter. I think that's the most touching thing.
Is she still an atheist?
Yeah, and always will be.
Huh.
And I think of the very notion of prayer depends on telepathy. If there weren't telepathy, prayer would be nonsensical.
I know some people would say, Julia, if God exists, how could he let that happen? You know, how could he let my daughter die? That's probably what she's thinking, huh?
No, for her, God plays no role.
None at all.
None at all.
Huh. Let's go to Steve, Los Angeles. Get us going here. Steven, go ahead, Stevie.
Good morning, people.
Hi.
Okay, so here's a lightweight question. Does the option of oblivion exist for those who aren't thrilled with the option of existence for the sake of existence?
I'm sorry, Steve, I didn't quite get that. It's a little difficult hearing you.
Okay, does the option of oblivion exist for individuals who aren't thrilled with the idea of existence for the sake of existence?
It does happen, yeah. And that there is, there's a temporary feeling of oblivion or non-existence. It's quite often reported, in fact, for people who are very much in denial about dying or deeply atheistic in the sense that this angry kind of atheism I'm talking about. Yeah, there's a sense of a kind of a threat of non-existence. But oblivion in a general sense, it can't happen. It's like asking for a vacuum. It doesn't exist.
Julia, what about the ghosts that are tricksters? They're mischievous, and, you know, they just play around.
Can
what
you
are
give
they
me
doing?
An example?
Oh, no. Casper, all right?
Sorry. He's so lovable.
He is lovable. I'll squeeze him like the doughboy.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, aren't there some ghosts that just are pranksters?
I suppose so. I mean, you know, thought forms, which ghosts are, very complicated, very developed thought forms, have a life of their own. I mean, the thoughts that you have in any given course of the day, some of them will be strong enough to be propelled on and become independent of you. And once that is set in motion, all kinds of things can happen. But I think one should enjoy the ghost. And if very often the ghosts won't interact at all. They just don't care about us whatsoever. And getting their attention in order to help them is really the first step in liberating them.
Let's go to Wesley in Las Vegas. Hey, Wesley, thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, Wesley.
All right, I just wanted to say, right after high school, I volunteered for the Marine Corps, and I ended up a machine gunner in 2nd Battalion, 9th Marines. Well, I got sent to the Southern Sangin Valley in 2010 via Barack Obama. And I was walking down this road called Route Sparta, and my best friend, I'd been with him for like three and a half years at that point, he got blown in half right next to me, and he was standing on the spot that I was standing on 5 minutes before. And I remember coming to, and I couldn't hear and I couldn't see. I just remember seeing pieces of his body falling out of the sky. And I have no idea why this happened and why it waited 5 minutes for me to get off the spot and start digging up another IED. And then that night, I had this dream to where I saw my best friend. His name was Jacob Tate. I saw him, and he was talking to me just as clear as day. I mean, I could see him perfectly. And we were laughing and cutting up, and he told me, he said, hey, he said, I'm okay. He said, this is what I got to do. He said, just go back and do what you do. And then I woke up, and, like, I mean, he was still gone, but, like, I had this weird feeling, like, almost like a sense of peace about the whole thing.
Oh my, that is just, that is a fabulous story. I'm so pleased to hear this. You saved yourself from post-traumatic stress disorder. Or your friend saved you.
Your friend saved you.
If you know what I'd like you to do, if you don't mind, would you communicate with me directly on my website, www.juliasante.com?
Which we have linked.
Can you do that for me? Because you soldiers, I have such interest in you guys.
Well, it's like that wasn't the first time that happened, though. There was another time, like they asked me, everybody in my squad, right? And this is when I was in Marja, and I got sent there for Operation Monster Rock. I was 22 years old, and they sent me there. And I remember everybody in my squad, they were married or they had kids or, you know, they were engaged. Mm-hmm. So I was like, all right, that's fine. I'll run point. I'll run bait. That's fine. I can do this, you know? So I did it because I considered myself an acceptable casualty because I was single.
Wow.
But I was walking across a wall, and, like, this guy, he was less than 100 yards away from me. It was this Taliban guy. He hit me with a 30-round machine gun burst. And I remember feeling him zipping between my legs, and I remember feeling the vortex from the rounds in front of my face. And this big plume of dust hit the wall from the machine gun rounds, and I hit the ground. Well, in the period of that first shot to the time I hit the ground, nobody was there with me, but I felt something grab me by the arms, grab me by the shoulders, and it started jerking my body around like I had no control over it, and it threw me on the ground. And I wanted to get your input on that because I was listening to your show last night, too, and I don't understand why this happens. I don't understand
why. Wells, let me ask you, had your friend already died by that time?
That was right before, actually.
Right before. Okay, so.
And he was right there, and... See, I crawled off and I got into this ditch and I started returning fire like I was supposed to. And then my best friend was over there and he looked at me and he gave me this horrible smile. I mean, just the worst, like I did something bad grin, you know, and he asked me, he said, are you okay? And I checked myself and I wasn't touched at all there. And I was a machine gunner. There's no reason that this guy should have missed me.
No, one should have hit you at least. Jeez, that's a miracle. What about the guardian angel syndrome that comes in and saves you on something like that? Is that possible?
Absolutely. Again, you know, the idea that it's an angel doesn't matter if it's an angel or not. It's acting like an angel, or the way we like to think of angels. Absolutely. It's very often somebody that you know that you're very closely, spiritually allied to. Could be a father or parent or someone from another life.
And if anybody wants to email Julia, you can get to her through her website, okay? It's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Let's go to Kentucky. William's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, William, go ahead.
Oh, man, I'm so glad I tuned in tonight. I'm learning a lot.
Perfect.
And you're talking about telephone calls. Well, the job I have, I live around the telephone, and the last few years, I know when I wake up before the phone's going to ring. Mm-hmm. I know who's calling. It's work, of course. Mm-hmm. And I already know where I'm going because when they call you, they tell you where you're going. And it just dawned on me tonight while I'm listening to your show that I know this stuff.
Right.
And the reason I was calling is I was wondering, you know, last about 4.5 years, I've been having really weird sleep. And just this year, my wife pointed out, you know, we woke up together and she's like, what was you doing last night? I'm like, sleeping. She's like, no, you walked to the window and you stood there. She said, for at least a couple hours. I go, I don't remember that.
Huh.
And there's been at least once a month, only when I'm home, when I wake up, I can't feel anything. All I can do is control my breathing. My hands, my arms, my legs, everything is numb. And I just wondered, is it possible that You know, have you dealt with people that frequently have death, near-death experiences? I mean, is that something that could be happening?
Well, the numbness is definitely you went out of your body and didn't get in exactly the same way. It's a kind of a trance or some the sort of thing that you can induce with self-hypnosis, too. I think you're just going to have to deal with the fact that... Did you have a stressful childhood?
William?
Yeah.
Okay. That's one of the reasons why your psychic abilities are higher than others. But you just have to deal with it. You have to accept the fact that you've got a lot more gifts than the average person is exhibiting. And start using them and working with them and enjoying them. And you're going into trances. You're looking out of windows, probably communicating with something. So enjoy it and develop it. Your telepathy skills, you recognize. And once you recognize that you have telepathic skills, you recognize them more often and you use them more purposefully.
So, Julia, go ahead.
Go ahead, yeah.
Do you train people so
sure.
they're not scared of death?
Oh, yeah, I do. I do workshops on dying, conscious death workshops. Yes, after-death communication workshops. I put people through their deaths in this life and past lives and in a future life. And usually by the time they get through that, they're not afraid at all.
Let's go to Rosemary in Iowa now. Hi, first-time caller. Go ahead, Rosemary.
Hi.
Hi, Rosemary.
Hi. I had a near-death experience.
Yeah.
And I went in spirit, and you can see you have all your memory with you.
Right.
I could not see my body because I didn't go to heaven.
Okay.
And I seen E.T. and D-Gen, beings that had animal features, could shapeshift, and talk perfect like a human. These beings were nice
mm-hmm.
that were trying to do me, and I did get to get back to my body, but they put a curse on me that they told me no church, no Bible, no possessions, no calling on another God, etc. I was clueless really what was going on until this last year, and I went and got saved, and Jesus protected me from them. It was a remedy from the D-Gen and ET beings.
Well, sounds like she had a bad experience.
Yeah,
there, Julia.
It does.
And I guess some people can get a bad experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does happen in near-death experiences, but generally understand that they're largely from your own making.
So is the devil real?
Not in my book. You know, I've been looking at devils and demon formations for the last 3,000 years since the beginning of writing. That's what I do. I mean, that's one of the things I do. Cuneiform, we're talking about the first known written languages. And you see them changing and changing and changing, and really this idea of the devil is new. It's a modern invention. It had political implications. I'm sorry that so many Americans especially believe in it. And I think we're creating the idea of the demonic by our belief.
Let's go to York, South Carolina. Roy's turn, east of the Rockies. Roy, go ahead.
Hey, yeah, whenever I was 13, I was in a motorcycle wreck and wound up in a coma for a few months.
Mm.
And from the head trauma, I now go through seizures.
Wow.
At this point, wow.
Well, during the time of the coma and during my grandma's seizures that I go through, I feel like I'm floating above the earth.
Yeah.
Like I'm actually flying.
Yeah.
And when I regain my senses, I can tell something's different. And it's like I was told something, but I can't remember it.
Right.
I mean, I'm almost 40. I suffer through dementia and stuff, but I still get by. And when I had the motorcycle wreck initially, my brother that was driving the car behind the motorcycle went in to shoot pool and just left me in the back seat.
No.
Well, my grandmother, she came out and searched and found me and carried me to the hospital.
She saved you.
She hadn't got there by 5 minutes. They said that I'd probably be dead.
Yep, you wouldn't be making this phone call right now. I wonder if the living can be guardian angels too, Julia.
Totally. Absolutely. And the living also help the dead in dreams and unconsciously and sometimes often consciously.
Well, sounds like his grandmother was one of those.
You bet. You bet.
Give us your website.
www.juliaasante.com.
What's your next hurdle? What do you do next?
I'm moving on. I'm on this book tour and lots of places to speak, lots of interviews, and I'll be doing this for the next several months.
Super.
Going across the country.
Do you have a book tour you want to mention where you're going to be?
It's all posted on my website, the schedule. I'm here in California now, and I'm ending it in New York in March.
Pretty intensive.
Yes, it is. It really is. But it's
right.
Fun, too. You meet lots of wonderful people like you.
It sure is. Julia, you have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much. You too.
Julia Asante. The book is called The Last Frontier. You know what? I just love talking about the afterlife. I mean, they're just incredible stories that we get from you and from the guest all the time. Well, stick around for our JFK show. That'll be on our next Coast to Coast show. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Jonathan Howell, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.